some of the panelists here you recognize. We have one that's on the air with us from time to time on Commodity Week. Vince Reinicke is right next to us. Bill Mayer is out of the office this afternoon from Strategic Farm Marketing. So Vince is here in his stead. We're glad to have Vince along. Next to Vince is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Wayne's a regular on Tuesdays at 8:50 and at 2:06. In fact, Wayne and I, when you're on the way home, you'll be able to hear our conversation because we had it already today and I sent it back to the station about, 40 minutes ago. So hopefully, as long as everything works right. If you hear Chris Hurt, you will not be hearing the right program. But if you do hear Chris Hurt,
he's not too calm.
I actually did that too. So Wayne is here. Wayne is, I think, and Wayne, let's find out who else. You have been to all of the All Day I Got looks. I think you're the only one in the room, correct?
Well, I don't know about these people.
Anybody else think they have been to all? Since 1991, this program's been held here. Anybody else been at this program? Wayne has been to all of them. All of them. Wayne, thank you so much. And he's been a panelist at all of them. I think you've been a panelist at all of them. I can't imagine you haven't.
That means I'm old.
He says that means he's old. Next to Wayne Nelson, of course, is Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities. He's out of Normal, Illinois, and Kurt airs with us on Mondays. And next to Kurt is Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, and he came in from Atchison, Kansas today. He's our Friday analyst in the morning and the afternoon as well. We're going to talk a little bit about soybeans, then we'll bring up the corn panel. Remember, these are interactive, and I really do need you to help me out. We did a lot of things in the cash grain segment, but now we're going to get down to brass tacks and want to know more from you to begin with. USDA and the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates reports decided not to give us anything to talk about today, for soybeans at least, because they changed nothing. Nothing at all in the WASD numbers. But, of course, the prospective plantings reports are due out at the end of the month. And as much as people want to talk about corn, it's the soybean number that seems to have the widest range of acreage that might be planted. And I think that is in large part, Vince, because soybeans are grown in such a wider range across the United States than corn is. Corn grown a lot of places, but if you look at the USDA county by county, where soybeans make up more than 40% of the acreage in any given year, you can run right up and down the Illinois, the Ohio, the Missouri River, from all the way from New Orleans all the way up. And it really does mean that soybeans are grown very, very widely, but that also a lot of those spaces can change acreage and do fairly often. If you listen to John Bondurant on the air, you know that he makes decisions, last week probably, about what's going to happen on his farms this week if he can get into the field. So this is where the switch might happen, if there really is any switch. USDA, Vince, has a pretty low number at 83.5 million. That, of course, from their ag form. Others have a much larger number. What do you think about the numbers, the range, and your expectations for March 31?
In general, those of us here are at Strategic Farm Marketing are roughly speaking in the 86 million acre camp of soybeans, of course. We expect we'll see more than the USDA forecasted. We do expect to see that in areas outside of what I'll call the heart of the corn growing region. But certainly, we do expect to see more acres of soybeans grown or planted this spring than what the USDA has forecasted, and I think what many are forecasting. So it'll be interesting to see as we go forward here and as we see how the spring unfolds. Matt Bennett this morning, really all the panel this morning, talked about weather and how the spring might unfold, and I think that's an important part considering some of the field work that was and wasn't done and where that is. And again, I think those will all play into how our soybean acreage looks after we're said and done this spring.
When you've considered Wayne Nelson soybeans for new crop, and you think about the coming year and yields and total production and ending stocks, have you got in your mind a set of numbers or maybe some places on the charts that are giving you some lead time as to which direction that place might move?
I do, Todd, but I'd like to interject this a little first. I'd like to give credit where credit's really due for this meeting. Dave and Todd work all year long to try to bring you the best in the agricultural news. They put it together, and they put this meeting together, which is great. Charlie Lindy started this 27 years ago, planning this meeting, and we started with about a third this crowd, and we thought it was tremendous at that time. And just look what these two guys have done in the station, and all of you people that support them, because without your support dollars, we're not very good at anything. So let's give Todd and Dave a big hand.
Thank you.
Well, it's been my pleasure to work with them for a long time, and I think as far as we're looking at these numbers, I think that it's going to be, if we're below 86 million when we get the planted acres out, that that's going to be friendly. 86 and a half or above, I think, is going to keep us in the same boat we're looking at, and then we're going to turn to weather. We've got a 39-week cycle low coming in here pretty soon. That's the chart point of it. Everything we look at is bearish as far as the fundamentals go. Look at South America, big. Look at the stocks that we've got for carryout, big. Look at what the government just said. They didn't lower them, big. But yet we continue to see beans trade higher, and we do have a chance of going up. But I think that as we look at things, the numbers I'm looking at for something we should do something around is, of course, around the $10 mark. And then if we can get up again into the 10-40 mark or so like that for our next sale.
And Kurt Kimmel, since Wayne managed to mention at least one chart point, I know you take a pretty close look at the charts and what might be happening. Can you tell me what they're telling you at this time?
Well, when you compare it to where we were last fall and the winter high, we've virtually been within that sideways trading range. I mean, we have some ups and we've had some downs, but overall, you know, the bull and the bear have both been right here as long as your timing has been right. Currently, if you look at the daily price chart, we're building a head and shoulders bottom. So if there's some type of fundamental catalyst could kick in through here, we can poke out the previous highs. Maybe we've got some oomph in through here. But technically, I don't think there's a chance in hell. I think we're just going to go lower here for a while. The longer-term cycles
That's a technical term.
Are due to be lower into this year. We had an 8 to 9 week cycle low here, 1st of February. We're due for another cycle low here as we go into March in through here. You got to remember, though, we came into this crop year out of beans. If you look at the long-term supply-demand balance sheet, we only had 92 million bushels coming in this crop year. If you visit with those guys that buy beans and corn for a living, end user, they were under the gun to get some coverage on. So they were aggressive. They got some coverage on. We ran into transportation problems in the Northwest. We had an extremely cold winter. We double-booked meal to the Southeast. We saw a truck strike in the southern hemisphere. So we've seen one thing after another keep these beans up here at some higher levels. This 380 million bushel, boy, that's huge. And beans are staying here? Well, that's what the projection is at the end of the crop year. So if we come in here at the end of the month and see larger bean acres and favorable weather, that could be the catalyst to move lower. Last time we had 350, 400 million bushel bean carryout was 2005, 2006. Mm-hmm. Those 2 years, beans traded between $5 and $7.
Well, that makes me happy. So the question came from the crowd already. What was the demand base in 05 and 06?
Well, that's when the currency started to turn around, and that was the low, and that's when demand started to come in. The best cure for low prices was low prices. Then we started to come up out of the hole then.
Mike Zuzulo on the end down there. I know you've been patiently waiting and thinking about the broader scope of beans, including what happens in South America. Do you have a macroeconomic look at the commodity?
Well, we talked earlier today about 300 years worth of combined experience, and there's some days that I feel 300 years old. Well, thank you. You're not going to win anything at the handout, Pete.
Okay, hold on. Okay. So there are a few before you. That's funny. Before we finish up, there are some folks in the audience that won't be up on stage over time that we need to...
Pete Manhart for one.
No, Pete. Yeah. So Pete Manhart over here from Bates Commodities is with us. Give him a nice round of applause. Bill Gentry, hold your hand up right here. He's in front from Risk Management Commodities is with us. From Standard Grain, you hear on Commodity Week, Joe Vaklavic is over here in the front. Thanks, Joe, for him, too.
I was going to wait until after you had finished your comments, but since Pete decided to get in on the action, I thought...
He couldn't wait, could he, Todd? Yeah.
Okay, you're at 300 years of experience, yes, or macroeconomics.
And, you know, today's bean market and what we've heard, you know, in terms of the beans the last 6 months, which has been mostly accurate, reminds me of a quote from Churchill. He said something like, success is from going from failure to failure with consistency and just going through it and continuing through it. So I think that's where I'll pick up with. Consolidation seems to be what I could foresee here in the next 30 days in the short term for the soybeans, that while the trade was buying beans and selling wheat and selling corn pretty much all of 2014, they've now taken the mindset that with bigger U.S. supplies, they're going to go ahead and buy back wheat and buy back corn and sell out beans. And I think the spreads have started to show that pretty nicely, especially the November bean, December corn ratio. And I think, like 2010, this is where, if there's one thing that I could present to the group today that may be of very big use, especially when it comes to crop insurance, when it comes to the lenders that are in the audience, which I'm very glad to see today, I think 2010 is a number and a year that you want to look at, because we're very close in both price action, lows and highs and trend, as well as actual price in both new crop corn and new crop beans, as we were back in the December and November contracts of 2010 right now. And we had a late March rally in December corn, pretty much ended with the acreage report from what I could tell, and then the beans kind of took over and we saw some short covering in the soybeans in the month of April. April was one of the better months for the soybeans in 2010, and then we went down in both into the middle part of the year. Now here's the kicker, and this is where the crop insurance comes in. In 2010, we had a substantial rally off May, June, and they both took out their highs from the spring. I think beans took it out by a little bit, didn't go much above it, but corn kept on going into expiration. So I have been around enough of the meetings on the crop insurance. People are talking about, well, I can't borrow as much because the prices are too low. What I would ask people to look at right now is, let's devise a plan that after mid-year, if we could put a low in place like 2010, make that harvest price work for you. Maybe second guess yourself or reevaluate the idea of taking a lower percentage crop insurance this year. That harvest price number might be one of your best friends by the time it comes to harvest. So something to consider.
Oh, wait a second. Walk me through that plan. So you want them to take on leased beans to back off on their crop insurance coverage?
Say that again.
What are you asking them to do for crop insurance?
A lot of producers this year are saying, I'm going to pull back on my percentage coverage on corn and beans.
And you're telling them to do that or not to do that?
No, do not.
Okay, not to do that. That's what I thought, but I wasn't.
Reevaluate that, because in the middle of 2010 calendar year, both new crop corn and new crop beans went higher. And in the case of corn, it kept on going higher the month of October, and beans were up there as well. So take a look at that with your lender and take a look at that with your crop insurance person.
Okay, and send this, the second part of that then is that you believe there may be a point at which they can work with, they can, you'll have to forgive me because I think I've got this wrong.
Go ahead.
When we get to July and we're bottoming out this market, as we might have done in 2010, mm-hmm. you want them to do what with the harvest
price? Well, you've got to make your decision on harvest. You've got to make your decision on your percentage right now. If you're going to go 80 or 85%.
Right, I understand that.
Okay,
part.
So what I'm saying is, if you shrink back to 80%, if that harvest price is higher than your February base price, you aren't going to be able to take advantage of that as well as if you would have increased your percentage.
Okay, so that's – so I was thinking that you were – you'll have to forgive me. I was thinking that you were having them do something in June or July.
No. I'm talking about right here, right
which,
now.
Which might have been the case if we had a high price and they were protecting sure. the harvest price.
Sure.
You could, relatively speaking, hedge that. But
right.
I thought you were telling them to do something else.
Right.
Okay. Good enough. Who's got a question on soybeans that they want these guys to ask? Anybody? I've got plenty more. I've got one. Where at? Any place? Okay. So there are a couple of things that are working in this, and I mentioned this morning, but maybe you have had some time to think about it, or maybe it's just not a discussion point yet. Scott Irwin took a look at what the United States has considered with soybean oil imports and how they can be counted at the RFS. His thought is, if U.S. EPA opened the door to allow soybean oil imports in, and remember, biodiesel or soybean oil diesel fuel counts as an advanced biofuel And that begins to ramp up this year and ramps up pretty sharply for the next several years. We don't have enough soybeans or other types of vegetable oil or recaptured oil to meet the needs. And we also have the biofuels gap of about 1.4 billion bushels, 1.4 million gallons between what is used in of gasoline, the blend wall, which is at 13.4 billion, roughly speaking, gallons, and 15 billion gallons, which is mandated for corn, not mandated for corn ethanol, but mandated for use in the United States. So there's a billion, 1.4 billion in there that has to be covered by something, can be covered by biodiesel. So you have 1.4 billion gallon, and then you have the advanced, and you have US EPA saying, well, we don't think we have enough recovered vegetable oils to make it all happen. Is there something there that could drive this marketplace for soybeans? Maybe not in the same way that the RFS drove ethanol to begin with, but that might be able to be used as a positive in the marketplace? Or maybe I'm just conjecturing too much.
For me, the meal market has always been the market to look after if you're a soybean bull. If you're looking for higher prices that are trending, that's usually associated with soybean meal because that's the demand side. I mean, it's a pretty amazing statistic that 80% of what China imports in soybeans is crushed. And that's where the market, in terms of the funds, and my take, Todd, is this year especially, the funds are really nervous that China's slowing down enough that they're going to protect their agricultural market more than they have in the past. And that may include the beans. And I think that's where, if Kurt, you know, talking about those $7, $8 prices, I think it's got to be China that's going to cause that. If soybean oil creates a rally opportunity, that to me is more like a weather rally, and it probably would be more of a sell eventually once that rally peters out.
So your thought is that it's all driven by China, and China takes how much of the world U.S. world supply of soybeans?
64%.
So they take 65. Can you imagine that? They take 65% of all the soybeans exported in the world.
Well, Todd, I'm going to be a little bit different than that, and just saying that if we can create a market for oil and get its value up a little bit, it doesn't have to be the leader of the two. But let's remember, it's just sort of like ethanol is the main thing on corn, but the DDGs help bring it up so we could pay more for corn and the process could run like the Dickens. If we can get the oil up, just like we got the DDGs up that China took a whole bunch for, it can give us a little hope on this bean market if we can go ahead and stay with that. Now, let's also remember here, we haven't got through the summer yet. We haven't got through the planting thing yet. We don't know what sort of bean yield we're going to have. I'm going to doubt. You know, yes, we're supposed to have a wet spring, we're supposed to have a cool summer, and we're supposed to have good crops. That's nice. We haven't seen the weather yet, and I watched the weather last night, and that doesn't mean that it generally is the same today. It was still raining 2 hours after they said it was going to quit. So I think that this is something that is a positive out there. It does give us some hope. Does it give us $16 beans? Probably not. Could it maybe give us back $12.50 beans? Possibility.
I think that it's the timing of the thing. I'm concerned about this crop year, and what you're talking about is probably more longer term, but that fits the longer term cyclical work as we see the super cycle turn back up into 2018, 2019. So that could be the catalyst to dig us out of the hole to march higher during those years.
Vince, when you talk with producers about crop insurance and then devise plans of action to protect that, which is unprotected, what do you tell them most often for soybeans?
Well, I think Mike made a great point earlier regarding, you know, some of the ability you have with crop insurance to protect what, you know, probably most efficiently is anything else you can use. So I think, you know, you have to start with the baseline of probably the highest coverage you can purchase because of the benefits associated with buying it through the crop insurance system. The subsidies, we all know how that works, and the benefits of the put and call together. So, you know, beyond that, Todd, I think we have to look at, number one, I think there's a good chunk that have some sold already. Let's say that you're a third sold. Well, you put that with a good crop insurance protection plan, and that's got you fairly well protected. Does that mean you could have done better? Well, you could have probably, but at the same time, we've still got some hope as we look ahead. And one thing that as I was preparing or kind of thinking about what we needed to talk about today regarding soybeans, I think it's fair to say that we probably have about the most bearish job of the day. It seems like most people look at soybeans and say, well, there's not a whole lot of hope left. And so as Bill and I were talking, you know, he said, well, if there's one thing that maybe we should convey, that is that, you know, when you tend to get everybody to the bearish side of the boat, maybe it's, you know, time to go back the other way. So I think it's important to remember that there has been a great deal of bearish discussion about how bad our supplies, how burdensome our supplies could get. And I think it's important to recognize that not that you just simply need to be a contrarian, but rather you need to be a wise contrarian in this case. You know, look for opportunities. Wayne mentioned 10 and 1030, 1040, those areas. You know, one of the stats we use in some of our meetings suggests that I believe it's 18 or 19 out of the last 22 years, you've seen the January high for November beans get eclipsed. Our January high this year is 1031 on November beans. So that would suggest that by the end of March, stats suggest, I should say, by the end of March, we should have some sort of rally potential. Now, why will that come? I think most of the folks up here would tell you that sometimes it's justified and sometimes it's not. But again, statistics show us that we've had a good opportunity year in and year out to get back to some numbers that might otherwise be considered unattainable at this point. So again, I think that you got to start and use a base of crop insurance, and you got to make wise decisions there. Then you come back, look at some of the forward sales you probably already got on the books. If you don't have some of those, then be looking at what can I get done here? What has the market tended to give me a chance to do in the near future, you know, year in and year out?
Hey, Mike, when we talk about a burdensome supply of soybeans left over for the ending stocks at the end of this year, something, what, around 385 million, if I remember the number correctly, how burdensome really is that? And can you put it in historical context or context with stocks-to-use ratios?
Yeah.
What does it mean? Because we're used to hearing numbers that are 150, 160, 125, 115, 92, 0.
No, I think you bring up a huge point. It's really not about the stocks. It's about the stocks-to-use ratios. And, you know, USDA cut the stocks-to-use ratios in half in the September-October time period last year. You get, in the U.S. anyway, Todd, I think you get down below 5.5% stocks-to-use. The market rally potential is greater, especially with the weather or any kind of bean oil supply shock, something like that. I think what's different, and this is what really bothers the analysts this year, is we've been relying upon a strong base underneath us in soybeans because we've been tight in the United States and relatively ample in the world. Now we're getting to a point where we're going to be ample, relatively speaking, in both. And so while the short term says that I think we can consolidate here and maybe pick up some extra premium off of a wheat or a corn-led rally, you really have to start thinking about the lower prices if we really do come through with a stocks-to-use ratio here in this country of 7.5%, 8%. We have not hit the 200-month moving average of around 880 in November beans for about 7 years. And you can't say that about the corn, and you can't say that about the wheat. We're straddling it in leave-month wheat right now. And so this is what we have to deal with, and I think if I were a producer right now, I would say to myself, if I've got more downside in the soybeans and it's a question mark in the corn and my profitability is about the same in both, I need to give myself some type of downside protection in case we never get any kind of meaningful rally. And why would that be? Well, the euro could collapse. I mean, Todd asked about the macro fundamentals. There is an existential problem with the euro, and the dollar is heading towards a level of parity with the euro right now, and it's at 107 right now. The euro is at 107. That means there's another 7% downside potentially in the euro against the dollar. That's not good for the commodity sector. So I think you really want to think about utilizing short-term moves up to really get some stuff underneath you in the beans especially.
On the stocks-to-use ratio, back in 2005, 2006, we were 15 to 18% stocks-to-use ratio. This current crop here, we're 10%. So if you carry a bigger supply in the next year and raise demand, I don't know if we'll quite get to those numbers. So when you look at the current price versus the price back then, I think we'll probably meet somewhere in the middle in there. So it's just a matter of creating some additional demand.
Yeah, so really you – You remain pretty bearish for the new crop soybean.
Well,
how bearish can you be?
Well, I don't think we're going down to $5.
I hope not.
Well, it's a picnic basket.
You know, I'm going to be like everybody else. If this, if that, 86 million acres plus, you have a good yield on it. I wouldn't be surprised, 850, 825 maybe.
Anybody else that low?
I like the 200-month moving average as a target where I would lift all my hedges of that 880 area.
Well, I think government on their average cash farm price was at $9.
$9.
Less that way. So,
you have to be down below. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to be down under that part of the time.
Okay. I saw a lot of bankers in the crowd today, and I'd like to specifically speak to you guys right now. I think that as we look at this, we're all saying that there's a possibility, if the stars align right, we could see that $8.80, $9 price fairly easy. At that, we'd like to have our farmers have a $10 base or something in there. To do some of this, because of the cost of options, we've got to sell something. And if you want to help them lock in something, what's on the top side? What price is going to make them be okay with you as a banker? Is it going to be $10.60? Can your farmer make profits there? Is it $11 or whatever? Because as a broker and everything, I'd like to know which options we can tell them that you'll back up and make the margin calls on for them if they go on above that to make it safe to guarantee you a $10 base and then maybe sell some more at $10.60, $11, $12, where we want to go. One of the things we've been looking at is buying a $10 put. Everybody says around $10 I can about break even with a good call. We'd like to have $10.50 so we can make 60 cents a bushel out there. So we sell a $10.60 call to help pay for that. Then we look at an $11 call. We know we can make some money at an $11 call. And we go down and we sell an $11.60 put underneath because that's a dollar down. And Mike's covering everything at $8.80, so that's 20 cents below where Mike says the bottom can be. And then, to put that on, it's going to cost us less than 6 cents. But yet we put you to this point where he's got $10 beans on the, and we're not doing this 100% because you got to go, you're double on top. You can only go up to 50% this way. But that would give you a very good base. But these guys need to know that their banker will say, hey, we get a weather scare and it goes to $12. You're either going to stand with me, talk to me, help me get out of these so I can go ahead and turn and sell some cash at these higher prices, or that you're going to go ahead and help make the margin calls at these, which would be profitable levels on at least 30 to 40% of his beans if you wanted to do it, under the least risk possible, still trying to hold them up that way. So I think that you guys have to sort of look and say, rather than we don't want to make margin calls, if you want to work with these guys and finance them, be able to pay their cash rents and do that, these are some of the things that they can go to do it.
I have a snide remark that I'm just not going to make. Something about the VIG somewhere in there. Oh, okay. So the bankers can be involved, but they're not likely to be involved. Probably not.
We don't know.
Well, I think it's fair to say, Todd, they probably really need to be involved in that decision because of the margins being tighter to go into this year. You know, you got to be thinking about what happens from a cash flow perspective. Even if you're sitting on a bunch of cash, you still got to be considering how I'm going to handle the cash flow problem or the cash flow situation of margin calls if the market is rallying.
Who's got a question that they want to ask? Anybody on soybeans? Yes, sir. Right. Oh, okay. So he'd like them to take, since they all are leaning to 86 at least for soybeans, what's the scenario look like if USDA is correct at this point? And remember, it's just an ag forum projection at 83.5 million acres. What happens to the price of beans then? Kurt?
Beans in the teens.
That margin calls that the bankers have to back up.
Yes, indeed.
No, that shifts the entire supply-demand balance sheet by about, you take 3 million acres times 45 bushels to the acre, that tightens back up. That puts you in the cards to start talking, 11, 11:25 soybeans. That shifts the trend. That suggests that we found some type of low end through here, and that gives reason for end users maybe a little bit more aggressive this fall.
Mike, do you have a thought?
I that's a great question, because if you would have either that scenario or the 2010 scenario develop where you had a low put in place, where do you cover your hedges if you never get to 880? And that's where that 1005 to 1025 level in November beans has a 1030-ish area. That area has been a real brick wall for November beans, and I would think that if you could close above that area on a weekly basis, you would want to cover at least some of your hedges and expect that we would break out. And I don't know if I would be in the camp of Kurt of 11, 11 and a quarter, but I think that a 75 to 90 cent rally would be enough to get the market's attention and make them think twice about selling for a while. But 1005 to 1025 area is where I would want to pull back on my hedges if I never got to 880 because of what you're talking about, or if we get that low in June and we never got to 880, that'd be my number to be watching for to take some positions off.
Hey, Vince, I'm going to take you through a couple of weather scenarios for soybeans. What happens in one of two cases? Things really go very well, and the corn planters roll early, and they begin to move quickly. And things go really very poorly, and the corn planters in the Midwest do not roll. What's the impact on soybeans in both situations?
Well, I think the latter, of course, the latter of those two, that's probably when soybeans, some of those acreages that we were concerned about, bigger acres, get solidified. If we can't get corn planted quickly and timely, especially considering the workload we have to do in some cases, it was discussed this morning about some anhydrous not getting put on in some spots and et cetera, et cetera. If we can't get corn planters rolling, then I think that translates into bigger bean acres in general, assuming that we're talking about areas that might not have really high APHs. Case in point, I was talking to a guy in Springfield the other day, and one of my customers, and I think it's like a 220 APH that he's insuring or something like that. It doesn't matter. He's planting corn no matter what, basically. And as you can imagine, you do the numbers, and that's the same decision you would make. But when you're not in that scenario, when you're looking at APHs closer to 200 or 180, those things, you're going to make the shift to soybeans quicker simply because you can still insure them without taking a hit there, longer, and you still have the potential to raise a good crop. So, it depends on how long we extend and how long we can't get planted. But I think, number one, you're going to see more acres of soybeans, and number two, you're going to have to just look at it and say, okay, how long did we wait to plant beans? And the resulting yield will have to kind of flux from there. However, if you do get started early and things go, as I'm going to say, as planned, I think most of us that farm here would suggest that we just soon get started 10th April or so and get everything planted right. But if that happens, I think you probably run the risk of a few more corn acres getting planted, especially in the I states here. If that translates, if that comes to fruition, then you got to be concerned about exactly how many bean acres we are going to get planted. And I don't know. I struggle to get to the 83.5 million acres the USDA is at, simply because our outlying areas are it's just challenging to pencil corn in some of those lower APH environments. However, if we would, I guess if we could get rolling good, I would think that, we could plant some more corn here in the Midwest. So I think all total, it will be a very interesting spring to watch unfold.
Hey, if you want to see some interesting things that are related to this and how acreage, because we talk a lot about the South and the Northwest changing acreage and what their plantings were, if you want to see some interesting work, John Newton and Todd Keithy just this week put up maps on the FarmDoc Daily website. Should be probably one of the first two articles there from 2005, so we see the change after the RFS where acres shifted. Illinois is down a couple hundred thousand, by the way, for corn planting since 2005, oddly enough. But the rest of the states are up, so 800 million or 800,000, I think, in Iowa, and the numbers for the Dakotas are above a million acres. But he also did it from Freedom to Farm. Remember Freedom to Farm in 1996, so you can see the change in the acreage. Pretty interesting stuff. So if you want to get an idea how acreage shifts and why it might be able to shift based on sheer economics. You can see some of those maps, and they're just maps. They're there at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It looked, Kurt, like you had something to follow up with. No? You're done?
I was daydreaming.
He does that when I talk. Who's got another question they want for soybeans? Yeah, Bob. So, well, YE, the yield exclusion in insurance, which allows you to throw out some pretty rough years, make a difference in where acres are planted? Kurt, anybody else?
Your boss says yes.
Who wants to take that?
There we go. I'll let anybody chime in here as they think. But, you know, one thing that some of you folks might understand, might not, maybe you've seen it. This is something we've studied, I guess, somewhat extensively. But, you know, you've got some folks in the Western Corn Belt, let's call it Oklahoma, up through Kansas, Nebraska, on into Minnesota. You've got some places there where you can exclude a number of years, not just like most of us here in Illinois, where we can throw out the 12 year. I shouldn't say throw it out. You're hiding it. You're hiding it for the time being while you choose that option. That translates into better APHs, and I think anybody that can run a calculator recognizes the value in that. However, what you don't quite understand probably is how much benefit there is in some of the outlying areas, i.e. the areas I just mentioned. One of the guys at our firm, Dave Jansen's from Minnesota, central Minnesota, and there's the home county that, where he grew up there. There's 6 years that you can exclude in the recent past out of the databases that those folks have to deal with. So this is only on corn. It doesn't really – I shouldn't say it's only on corn. It does apply to beans in some areas. But here in Illinois, it doesn't really apply to any area, anything but corn. And so that's, I think it's a great question. Yes, it definitely does benefit the corn acres that might get planted. However, I think one thing that you have to understand as well, we've all heard about it probably because of some of the discussions we've had, you know, earlier on. Hopefully you all have heard about it, but that doesn't mean that everyone's heard about it. And so to that end, I think that you have to recognize that there are areas in the Corn Belt that may not have gotten trained on exactly what this yield exclusion thing looks like, what it's for, what it might do, or how beneficial it could be. Maybe that's short-sighted of me to say that, but I think it's fair to say that considering that RMA didn't even really understand what it looked like or what it was going to look like and how it was going to work about the 10th of January, it's also challenging to think that all farmers are you know, educated on it as well.
So it is really,
and insurance agents too.
Insurance agents too.
No, we didn't get the programs right for this until about last week to even run this stuff. Right. So, but I think I'd like to add to what he said, because he's 100% right that in some of the areas like Minnesota, Dakotas, and like that, it's going to be very advantageous. It's going to be slightly advantageous for about 50% of you out here to look at it. On the ones that we've run for ours, we have some that are, some that it isn't worth the extra payment to do it. I mean, some of them are adding 3-to-1 what it costs you to add to kick it in, and some of them are like a 1.1-to-1, you know, like 1.2-to-1. And that doesn't give you enough to want to pay the extra premium to do it and to want to go along that way. So basically, it's something you want to look at on your own insurance, but I don't think it's anything that's going to change what you're going to plant, corn or beans, of everybody in this room.
Yeah, our projections were maybe it would adjust acres by 500,000 acres total across the country. So, you know, in our opinion, best case scenario, everybody knows about it. They probably change 500,000 acres across the country. So
okay,
not a big impact.
Not in our area.
Not in our area.
I was to his meeting when they talked about it. We're not arguing. We're saying the same thing.
Exactly.
So on Dave Jansen's farm, and I saw these farms in Minnesota, I think I saw these numbers. It changed the average yield for corn.
Was it 30 bushel per acre, I think, on APH?
So. Yeah, it changed to 30.
It's a pretty big impact.
It was a huge
impact. In some areas.
Yes, Pete.
But not here.
Do you have a question, Peter, or were you just holding your hand up?
Right.
You're scratching your head. Y-E? like other crop insurance, if you choose, by the way, to use Y-E, you can choose not to later, but it stays in place until you tell them that you no longer want it. So just in case you happen to be using Y-E, you can. And you can revoke that decision later. Let's wrap this up. Final thoughts. We'll start with you, Mike Zuzulov.
I had a feeling that we were going to have to talk about this. So I brought a brand new box of stress balls that I'll have out at the break. I sincerely appreciate doing this every year, and it's one of the greatest meetings that is put on for agriculture. Don't give up. Keep trucking. We've been through this before. Last word on the markets. We've talked a lot between Todd and Dave and I about the wheat and the corn relationship. That's ended up being correct. I think the wheat and the soybean relationship is extremely important and gaining traction as well. In other words, if we get a wheat low, I'm going to venture a guess we've not got a euro currency existential problem and the dollar's getting ready to top. So that may bring the investment community back to reallocating assets out of the equities markets and into commodities. And so I look at this market like a domino effect. If we get a euro bottom, a dollar top, that should bring with it a wheat bottom, a crude oil bottom, and investors don't worry about China falling off the edge economically. And that spells a better commodity outlook. And I don't want to try and put that together too much with the 2010 market, but it's not unlike what happened in 2010. All of a sudden, the trade went from looking at big, big supplies to a really comfortable demand base that they needed to bid up acres again the following year. Thanks again.
Kurt Kimmel? General observation is, to add, is the mile and the sorghum story, that's huge. Out west there's going to be a lot of acres go that way. There's just a lot of premium there. China's been buying it underneath the radar. How that affects the acreage mix, we'll find out here at the end of the month. The other shock are those cotton. Guys are going heavy cotton, you know, normally this 10 million acre area, and they're not backing off. The input costs not scaring them. I, you know, don't know what they're looking at through here, but cotton's at some lower prices, so look for cotton acres to stay strong. I think the bottom line is stay flexible in your marketing. We've been approaching the market with putting a price floor underneath the marketplace. That way, if the bears do kick in, we go lower. We got some downside protection. If the farmer's almanac's right, we go higher. Well, you've got cash grain to sell higher. I think you guys stay flexible and take advantage of that. It wasn't too long ago hog farmers had multi-million dollar portfolios ready to retire. It was gone in a matter of 6 months. And, you know, the story about the old guy, he had feeder pigs, wasn't going to be able to pay to feed them out, so he stuck 10 feeder pigs out in the front yard and said, "Free feeder pigs." So he went to town, came back. Well, there's five more in there. So stay flexible and profitable.
Wayne Nelson.
Well, if you haven't got much price, there's a few good things coming up. We're probably going to have the truckers back on strike in Brazil because they're not going to lower their diesel price down there. It's rained a lot in Argentina. ADM's got a peanut farm down there, and they can't even get to the farm now because the roads are so bad and so muddy. There's 20% that's totally called saturated down there. So we got 30%. Instead of kicking that Argentine estimate up a million metric tons, why, they might take that away and be back down to where it is. That could be a little bit that way. We've got planting intentions coming out, and we keep not losing bean sales. It seems like we continue to make a few. If you remember 3 years back, about this time of year, we didn't just not make sales. They took them away and canceled them. So we're still hanging in there partially on that. And it looks like we've got to maybe have a cooler, wetter spring that might hold back a little bit on planting. That's going to keep things going. And, of course, the 39-week cycle low, which could give us a little pump here. I'm long-term bearish because of the big numbers, and I'm a fundamentalist. But overall, we got some chances here. But be ready. Buy some puts when it goes up. Sell some higher price calls. Or just do some pricing.
And Vince Reinecke.
I think one of the things we haven't really discussed, it was discussed this morning a little bit, but just in general about basis levels on soybeans, I think that, you know, with where we are in the marketing year, in the general export cycle out of the U.S. and even out of South America, I think one thing you can do is look a little bit to basis to guide you on what we might have in store for the bean market. And I think that you watch basis levels drop off, you're going to do it because we quit exporting, or we should slow down our pace exporting, I should say. So that's probably what happens. However, if we would watch basis levels stay strong as we look into the next 3 months, then I think that's an indication that maybe there's more demand for the protein we call soybeans you know, in the near future. So just pay attention, and I think, as these guys said, you know, they did a great job reminding you to be flexible and do the things that will make you profitable, because you can't go broke making profit.